keep Corporal Littlebottom?
Sir?
You're wearing a... a kilt?
A skirt, sir. Leather.
Oh. I'll come with you, said Angua. Sherry can keep an eye on the desk. When they were out in the fog, Carrot said, Do you think there's something a bit odd about Littlebottom?
Seems a perfectly ordinary female to me.
Female? He told you he was female?
She.
Angua could smell his bewilderment. Well, you shouldn't encourage her. I mean, of course there's female dwarfs, but they might have the decency not to draw attention to the fact.
Angua gasped. Carrot, you've got something wrong with your head.
What?
You've got it stuck up your bum.
The Earl of Unk, Corporal, the Right Honourable Lord C.W. St. J. Nobbs.
The buzz of conversation stopped. Heads turned. Lady Selakai came forward, a tall, angular woman with sharp features and an aquiline nose. She curtsied. There were gasps of surprise around her, but she glared at the assembled guests. There was a smattering of bows and curtsies.
"Has someone dropped something?" said Nobby. "I'll help you look if you like."
A footman appeared at his elbow, bearing a tray.
"A drink, Millard?"
"Yeah, pint of Winkles."
"Winkles?"
Lady Selakai said.
"A tape of beer, your ladyship."
Her ladyship hesitated only a moment.
"What a novel idea! I'll have a pint of Winkles, too."
This had a certain effect among those guests who know on which side of the biscuit their pâté was spread.
"Capital suggestion! A pint of Winkles here, too. Ha ha! Great! Winkles for me! Winkles all round! But the man's an absolute...
Shut up!"
Vimes lit the candles by his desk and opened his notebook. He wrote arsenic and drew a big circle round it. Around the circle he wrote Father Tubalcheck's fingernails, rats, veterinari, and Mrs. Easy. Then he wrote golems and drew a second circle. Around that he wrote Father Tubalcheck ? Mr. Hopkinson ? Stolen clay, grog. He stared at the candlelight. What has the priest got that anyone wants? He wrote, words. What had Mr. Hopkinson got? He wrote bakery. What else? Oven. He drew a ring around oven and a ring around stolen clay. He stared out at the fog. Golems aren't alive, but they think they're alive. What do things that are alive do? Answer, breathe, eat. Crap. He paused. And make more things. Something tingled at the back of his neck. Oh, gods. They couldn't do that, could they? No, surely not. But after all you needed was clay, and a holy man to write the words, and someone to sculpt the figure. Golems had had hundreds of years to learn to be good with their hands. He looked up at the candlelight. Grog, old clay ground up. They'd added some of their own clay. They'd put part of their own selves into a new golem, clay of my clay, my own flesh and blood. His hand trailed down to the bottom drawer of his desk, as it always did when he was worried. There was never a bottle there these days, but old habits died. There was a glassy ching. Vime's hand came up with a fat bottle. The Macabre. Finest malt. But it shouldn't have been there. He'd never bought a bottle since he'd got married. He'd promised Sybil. And this wasn't any old rotgut. This was the Macabre. A sniff. Just a sniff.
"The buffet is ready,"
Lady Selakai announced.
"Got any pig knuckles?" said Nobbs. A pig-knuckle sandwich goes down a treat with Winkles.
It is, perhaps, not the most delicate food.
Oh, you can cut the crusts off. Even the toenails, if you're feeling posh.
Sergeant Colon opened his eyes and groaned. He was trussed hand and foot. His head ached, too. They'd hit him with something. He appeared to be lying in darkness on a wooden floor. There was a greasy smell in the air. As his eyes grew accustomed to the dark, he could make out very faint lines of light, such as might surround a door. He could also hear voices. Someone apart from Sergeant Colon was in trouble.
"Clown! You got me here for this? Aha! Why couldn't you have let him look around? What could he have seen? I know that copper. A fat old coward with all the brains of, aha, a pig. How about if we kill him? Send Meshuggah after him, aha. Are you sure? It's getting odd. It wanders off and screams in the night, and it's cracking up. Aha! See to it. I heard that Vimes is... I've seen to Vimes.
Colon hadn't the faintest idea what this thing called Meshuggah was, except that it sounded like a fine idea to be wherever it wasn't. The cords were really tight and cut into his wrists. Now, if he were a resourceful type, like Sam Vimes or Captain Carrot, he'd find a nail or something to rub them on. He managed to get to his knees and shuffled across the planks. What he found was a tiny circle of light on the floor. A knothole had long ago fallen out, and light, dim orange light, was shining through. Colon applied his eye to the hole. There was a suggestion of wateriness. He must be over one of the numerous streams that flowed through the city. The stench was appalling. The smell of ammonia bored into Colon's sinuses like a drill. A couple of feet below him was a very small raft. Half a dozen rats were laid neatly on it, and a minute scrap of candle was burning. Then a tiny rowing boat entered his vision.
"We mad, Arthur?"
The gnome looked up.
"Who's that, then?" "Your old mate, Fred Colon. Give me a hand. What are yous doing up there? I'm tied up, and they're going to kill me. Why does it smell so bad? It's the old cockbill stream. The cattle pens drain into it. Just call me King of the Golden River, eh? Don't piss about, Arthur. They're going to kill me."
Desperate cells flared in Colon's mind.
"I've been on the trail of those blokes who are poisoning your rats. The Rat Catcher's Guild! I knew it! I've been finding dead rats everywhere down here, fat as your head! Right, and I've got to give the names to Commander Vimes."
Arthur rode out of sight. After a while, there was a scratching noise in the walls, and then someone kicked him in the ear. Wee Mad Arthur was holding up his stub of candle. It was small, such as might be put on a child's birthday cake.
"Would there be any money in this?"
"Lots. Untie me."
Colon felt his hands free.
"Where's the trapdoor?" "You're on it."
There was a twang, and Colon's legs were free. He sat up.
"Is there any other way out?" "You'll have to swim for it." "You want me to drop into that?"
There was a creak outside the door. Colon got to his feet. The door opened. A figure in silhouette filled the doorway. Colon looked into two triangular glowing eyes. Now, Colon's body was considerably more intelligent than the mind it had to carry around. It leapt several feet in the air, pointing its toes as it came down. The iron tips of Colon's boots hit the trapdoor together. The rust of years gave way. Colon went through. Colon struggled not to breathe. Gloop! He rose again, buoyed up by various gases released from the ooze. Someone landed on his helmet and kicked it.
"Right turn! Forward!"
Half walking, half swimming, Colon struggled down the fetid drain. Terror lent him strength. He didn't stop until he was in the open air. In the darkness, he found the greasy pilings of a jetty and clung to them, wheezing.
"What was that thing?"
said wee Mad Arthur.
"Gollum," Colon panted.
Angua and Carrot walked silently through the fog. Then Angua stopped.
"It's gone up this alley, and it was moving faster. There's humans and sausages?"
Carrot started to run. There was a crowd further up the alley. At the rear was a familiar figure with a tray, craning to see over the heads.
"What's going on, Mr. Dibbler?"
"They've got a golem."
"Who?"
"Oh, some blokes. They've just fetched hammers."
Carrot rammed both hands into the press of bodies. Grunting and struggling, the crowd opened up. At the end of the alley, three men with hammers were approaching the golem cautiously. Dorful was crouching back, shielding itself with its slate on which was written,
"I am worth $530.
"Money," said one of the men. "That's all you things think about."
The slate shattered under a blow. He raised his hammer again.
"What do you think you're doing, my friend?"
said Carrot calmly.
"You can't stop us. Everyone knows they're not alive."
"But I can arrest you for willful damage to property."
"One of these killed that old priest."
"If it's a thing, how can it commit murder?"
"A sword is a thing."
Carrot drew his own.
"And you couldn't possibly blame a sword if someone thrust it at you, sir."
The man swallowed.
Good point."
"Yeah, but you can't trust them."
One of the other men raised his hammer defiantly. Just by his ear, he heard a growl. It was quite low and soft. He turned. An attractive watchwoman stood behind him. Her mouth was turned up at the corners, and all her teeth were visible. He dropped the hammer on his foot.
"Well done," said Carrot. "You can always do more with a kind word and a smile."
He turned to the golem, which had dropped to its knees and was trying to piece its slate together.
"Come on, Mr. Dorful. We'll walk with you the rest of the way."
"Are you mad?"
said Sock.
"You think I want that back?"
"He's your property," said Carrot.
"I'm not having one of those under my roof."
He tried to slam the door, but Carrot's foot was in it.
"Then I'm afraid you're committing an offence, to wit, littering."
"Oh, be serious."
"I always am."
"He always is," said Angua.
"Well, I don't want a killer in my slaughterhouse. You have it if you're so keen."
"Watchmen are not allowed to accept gifts."
Carrot looked at Dorful, who was staring forlornly at the ground.
"But I will buy him from you."
"Buy? For money?"
"Yes."
The butcher shrugged.
"Oh, well, that's different. It was worth $530 when I bought it, but it's got additional skills now."
"I'll pay you a dollar."
"A dollar? That's daylight rob—"
Angua's hand shot out and grabbed his neck. It had been a trying evening, and the smell of fresh meat was making her senses twang. She could smell his blood and fear. She tried to think of cabbages.
"It's night time," she growled.
Sock listened to the call of the wild.
"A dollar, right."
Carrot produced one and waved his notebook.
"A receipt is very important. A proper legal transfer of ownership."
"Right, right."
Sock scribbled a few hasty lines.
"I give the bearer full and total ownership of the Golem Dorful in exchange for $1, singed Gerhardt Sock."
Carrot took the paper.
"Thank you. Is that it?"
"Certainly." The door slammed shut.
"Oh, well done," said Angua. "So now you own a golem."
Carrot looked thoughtful.
"Dorful?"
The golem looked up.
"Here's your receipt. You don't have to have a master."
The golem took the scrap of paper between two thick fingers.
"That means you belong to you. You own yourself."
Dorful shrugged.
"What did you expect?" said Angua.
"I don't think he understands."
Carrot took the paper out of Dorful's fingers.
"I suppose it might work. It seems a bit invasive. But after all, what they understand is the words."
He reached up, opened Dorful's lid, and dropped the paper inside. The golem blinked. That is to say, its eyes went dark and then brightened again. It raised one hand very slowly and patted the top of its head. And golems had mouths. This one opened, revealing a thin line of red light. The voice of the golem shivered in the fog.
"Oh, ye gods!"
Angua backed away.
"They can't speak.
I'll find your bit of slate," Carrot began hurriedly.
Dorful gently pushed him out of the way and strode off.
"Are you happy now?"
said Angua.
While the party buzzed around him, Nobbs had elbowed some waiters away from the buffet and was currently scraping out a bowl with his knife.
"Nya, Lord de Nobbs."
Nobby turned.
"Wash it."
He licked the knife and wiped it on the tablecloth.
"Are you busy, my lord?"
"Just making myself a meat paste sandwich."
"That's pâté de foie gras, my lord."
"Want a quail's egg? They're free."
"No, thank you."
"I'll get six in my mouth at once. Watch."
Amazing, my lord. I was wondering whether you would care to join a few of us in the smoking room. Indeed.
A friendly arm adroitly piloted Nobby away from the buffet.
"So many people want to talk to you."
"You sure you don't know where I was?" Colon said.
"Yes, what? Think of the place?"
"But it was dark and foggy and I was just going through the motions."
"Ha ha! Get one!"
Sergeant Colon had tried to clean himself up, but cleaning yourself up with water from the Ankh was difficult. The best you could hope for was an all-over grey.
"So where was I? Don't ask me! I just hunts under the cattle market. Is this where the yez gives me the money?"
"You'll have to come to the watch house."
"I got the business to run."
"I'm swearing you in as a special watchman for the night."
"What's the pay?"
"$1 a night."
Wee Mad Arthur's tiny eyes gleamed. They gleamed red.
"What are you looking at my ear for?"
Wee Mad Arthur said nothing. Colon turned. A golem was standing behind him. It was taller than any he'd seen before, and its eyes shone like red searchlights. It raised a fist above its head, opened its mouth, and screamed like a bull. Arthur kicked Colon on the ankle.
"Are we running or what?"
"Cigar, your lordship."
"Brandy, my lord."
Lord de Nobbs sat back in the comfort of his chair. This was the life.
"We were just talking, my lord, about the future governance of the city now that poor Lord Vetinari's health is so bad. It would obviously upset the current equilibrium if we looked for a new patrician at this point. What is your view?"
"Yeah, the guilds fight like cats in a sack."
"A masterly summary."
There was a general murmur of agreement. A chair said,
"Gentlemen, perhaps it is time for a new direction. Time for blood to reveal itself."
"Odd way of putting it," Nobby thought. "Still..."
He waved his cigar expansively.
"No problem there. Everyone knows we've got a king hanging around. Send for Captain Carrot, that's my advice."
Sergeant Colon risked looking over his shoulder. The golem was running after him in long, easy strides. Wee Mad Arthur caught him up.
"This way!"
There was a flight of old wooden stairs against the side of a warehouse. The gnome went up them like the rats he hunted. Colon, panting like a steam engine, followed him. Halfway up, he looked around. The golem had reached the bottom step. The wood creaked, and the stairway, grey with age, trembled. The golem took another step. Colon hurried up the stairs. Behind him, the golem started to leap from step to step. The whole structure swayed. Wee Mad Arthur had already reached the top.
"Come on, it's gaining on yes!"
The golem lunged, and the stairs gave way. Colon flung out his hands and grabbed the edge of the roof.
"Come on, pull yourself up, you silly bugger!" "Can't!" Why not? It's holding on to my foot.
When Carrot arrived back at the watch house, Corporal Littlebottom indicated with a flicker of her eyes the three people sitting grimly on the bench.
They want to see an officer. I knocked on Mr. Vimes's door and I don't think he's in.
Carrot smiled. Mrs. Palm, Mr. Bogus and Dr. Downey. I am sorry, we're rather stretched at present, what with the poisoning and this business with the golems. The head of the Assassin's Guild smiled, but only with his mouth. It's about the poisoning we wish to speak. I believe that on occasions Commander Vimes has made derogatory comments about Lord Vetinari.
Oh, yes, but everyone does that.
Do you?
Well, no.
And he personally took over the investigation of the poisoning?
Yes.
Didn't you think that was odd?
No, sir. I think he's got a sort of soft spot for the patrician in his way. He once said that if anyone was going to kill Vetinari, he'd like it to be him.
Indeed.
But he was smiling.
Sort of. And his efforts to discover the poisoner have not reached any conclusions?
Not as such, sir.
We would like to inspect the commander's office.
I don't know if that's...
Please think very carefully. We represent the guilds of this city. We have a good reason. You will, of course, accompany us.
Well, I suppose if I'm with you...
Right. Carrot led the way and opened the door. Oh. Downey peered at the figure slumped over the desk. It would appear that Sir Samuel is in, but quite out of it.
I can smell the drink from here, said Mrs. Palm.
All right for some, eh?
Said Mr. Bogus.
But he hasn't touched a drop all year. He goes to meetings about it.
Now, let us see. Downey pulled open one of the desk drawers. Captain Carrot, can you witness that there appears to be a bag of greyish powder in here? I will now... Vimes' hand shot out and slammed the drawer on Downey's fingers. His forearm swung upwards and caught the man full on the nose. Then Vimes opened his eyes.
What's that? What's that? Oh, oh, Dr. Downey, you shrunk me.
Downey clutched his streaming nose. Oh, I'm so sorry. Vimes pushed the chair back into Downey's groin and stood up. I must have dropped off. And when I found someone stealing...
You're raving drunk, man,
said Mr. Bogus. Indeed. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Want me to continue?
How about this packet?
Downey waved at the desk. Oh, yes. Vimes grabbed the packet, ripped it open, and tipped most of the powder into his mouth.
Feel that tingle on the tongue. But that's arsenic.
Good gods, is it? Vimes dropped the packet into Bogus's hand, but the thief jerked back and it tumbled to the floor. Carrot knelt down and licked his finger.
It's sugar.
But we had information.
Oh, did you? Said Vimes. Something on the lines of Vimes is dead drunk in the watch house, and he's got a bag of arsenic in his desk. Mrs. Palm cleared her throat.
This has gone far enough. You are correct, Sir Samuel. We were all sent a note.
I see we were misinformed. Allow me to apologise.
Come, gentlemen.
She swept out of the door.
I'll show you out, said Carrot.
When he hurried back, he found Vimes leaning out of the window and feeling the wall below. Not a brick dislodged, not a tile loose, and the front office has been manned all day. Odd, that. Vimes shrugged and walked back to his desk. He glared at Carrot. When we find the man responsible, at the top of the charge sheet is going to be forcing Commander Vimes to tip a whole bottle of single malt onto the carpet. That is a hanging offence.
Fancy them even thinking that you'd poison the patrician.
I'm offended they think I'd be daft enough to keep the poison in my desk drawer.
Right.
That's why I've got it in my pocket. He pulled out a paper bag. Then opened the door, poked his head into the corridor, and yelled,
Little Bottom!
To Carrot he said, You know, I feel quite perked up. The old brain has begun to work at last. You know the golem that did the killing?
Yes, sir.
Do you know what was special about it?
Well, it was a new one. The golems made it themselves. They needed a priest for the words, and they had to borrow Mr. Hopkinson's oven. I expect the old men thought it would be interesting. They were historians, after all. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's obvious. But, what else? You mean the fact it's gone mad, sir? I mean, they drove it mad, sir. The other golems. They didn't mean to, but they wanted it to do so many things. It was like their child, all their hopes and dreams. And when they found out it had been killing people, their own clay...
You wanted me, Commander?
Said Cheery. Yeah. Vimes handed her the packet. Is this arsenic? Cheery sniffed it.
It could be arsenic acid, sir.
What's that on your hands?
Nail varnish, sir.
Fine, fine. Funny. I thought it would be green.
Wouldn't look good on the fingers, sir.
I meant the arsenic, Little Bottom.
Oh, you get all sorts of sulphides, sir. If you cook them up with nitre, you get arsenic acid and a load of nasty smoke. Really bad.
Dangerous stuff.
But useful, sir. Tanners, dyers, painters. It's not just poisoners that have got a use for arsenic.
I'm surprised people aren't dropping dead all the time.
Oh, most of them use golems, sir.
The words stayed in the air. Vimes caught Carrot's eye. This is it, he thought. This is where questions become answers.
These golems, said Carrot. They'd be covered in arsenic, wouldn't they?
Grease under the old man's fingernails, said Vimes, with arsenic in it. He looked at the notebook still on his desk. It's there, he thought. We've seen the answer and haven't seen that it is the answer. Something that strikes in the night. And there it was. There it is, he said softly, on my desk, you see?
What, sir?
The thing that's poisoning his lordship. There it is. I didn't ask Mildred Easy what else she took, and old Mrs. Easy was a seamstress, and this is Autumn, killed by the night's drawing in. See?
Carrot looked at the desk. Can't see it myself, sir.
Of course you can't. That's how you can tell it's there. If it wasn't there, you'd soon see it. Vimes gave a huge manic grin. Only... you wouldn't. See? Wee Mad Arthur peered over the edge of the roof.
Heavy, is it? Get it with your other foot!
There was a sucking sound. Then plop. A moment of silence, and a loud crash of pottery in the street.
The boot it was holding came off. How? It got lubricated. Up yes, come then. Can't. Why not? Arms tired. Another 10 seconds, and I'm going to be a chalk outline.
Down below there was a chink of pottery shards.
What was that?
Wee Mad Arthur looked down.
It's putting itself together again. You sure? It's done the whole leg already.
Something hissed somewhere below Colon's feet.
It's having a bit of trouble, though. It's put its knees on wrong way round.
Dorful sat hunched in the abandoned cellar where the golems had met. Occasionally, the golem raised its head and hissed. Red light spilt from its eyes. Dorful huddled under the glow of the universe. Its murmur was a long way off, muted. The words stood around the horizon, reaching to the sky. Gollum must have a master. Then a voice said quietly, You own yourself. Dorful saw the scene again and again, saw the face, hand reaching up, felt the sudden icy knowledge. Own yourself, It echoed off the words, and then rebounded back and forth, increasing in volume. The echoes poured around the letters, blasting like a sandstorm. Cracks started and then ran, zigzagging across the stone, and then the words exploded. Great slabs of them, mountain-sized, crashed in showers of red sand. The universe poured in. Dorful was among the universe. It could feel it all around, the purr of it, the busyness, the spinning complexity of it, the roar. There were no words between you and it. You belonged to it. It belonged to you. There were no words. You owned yourself. Not that shalt not. Say, I will not. The golem opened his eyes. No master. Dorful stood upright. He reached out one arm and extended a finger. The finger pushed easily into the wall where the argument had taken place. Dorful dragged it carefully through the splintering brickwork. It took him a couple of minutes, but it needed to be said. The golem completed the last letter, then walked away, leaving behind no master. A blue overcast from the cigars hid the ceiling of the smoking room.
Yes, Captain Carrot. But is he the right man?
He's got a birthmark shaped like a crown.
Nobby waved his brandy glass at a waiter.
Same again, mister. And fill it up this time, eh? No sense in having a great big glass and only sloshing a bit in the bottom, is there?
I'm afraid, said a chair, that having a sword and a birthmark are not qualifications. We would need a king from a lineage that is used to command.
Like yours, my lord.
In fact, we were thinking of offering the crown to you. Nobby's eyes bulged, and then his cheek bulged. It's not a good idea to spray finest brandy across the room when your lighted cigar is in the way. The flame hit the far wall.
King? King? Have Mr. Vines cut me head off?
All the brandy you can drink, my lord.
It's no good if you ain't got a throat for it to go down.
What are you talking about?
Mr. Vimes, he goes spare.
Listen, you silly little man, my lord, you silly little lord, you'd be able to have him executed if you wished.
I couldn't do that.
Why not?
He goes spare.
Nobby looked around. The shadows in the smoke seemed to be closing in.
No, I can't be king. Old Vimes will go spare. Will you stop saying that?
Nobby pulled at his collar.
It's a bit hot in here. Which way is the window?
Over there.
Nobby hit the glass helmet first, landed on top of a waiting carriage, bounced off, and ran away into the night. Cherie Littlebottom strode into the palace kitchens and fired her crossbow into the ceiling.
Don't nobody move!
The patrician's domestic staff looked up from their dinner.
All right, Corporal, I'll take over now, said Vimes. Is Mildred Easy here?
All heads turned. Mildred's spoon dropped into her soup.
It's all right. I just need to ask you a few more questions.
Vimes walked around the table. You didn't just take food home for your family, did you?
Sir?
What else did you take? Mildred licked her dry lips. Look, everyone takes small things from where they work. Small stuff, odds and ends. Ends, Miss Easy. I'm thinking about ends.
You mean the candle ends, sir?
Vimes took a deep breath. Ah, you take home the candle stubs. Still half an hour of light in them, I expect, if you burn them in a saucer.
That's not stealing, sir, that's perks.
Perks? Of course. I expect you get the ones from the bedrooms, yes?
Yes, sir. I'm allowed, sir. They're better than the old coarse ones in the hall, sir.
Perhaps you can show me where they're kept. The candle pantry wasn't a big room, but its shelves were stacked floor to ceiling.
These are what we use in his lordship's room, sir.
Mildred handed him 12 inches of white candle. Oh, yes, number fives. Nice white tallow. We burn these at home. We get ours from Carrie's in the Shambles. Very reasonable prices.
Yes, sir. He delivers them here special, sir.
And you put these candles in his lordship's room?
Yes, sir.
Anywhere else?
Oh, no, sir. His lordship's particular about that. Gran said they gave a lovely light, sir.
I expect she sat up with your little brother, did she? Because I expect he got took sick first, and if I know old Mrs. Easy, she did her sewing.
Yes, sir.
There was a pause.
Am I going to lose my position, sir?
No. No one deserves to lose their jobs. Vimes looked at the candle. Except possibly me. Sergeant Colon heard a clank below him.
What's it doing now?
Wee Mad Arthur peered over the edge of the roof.
It's having problems with its elbows. Oh, it's worked it out.
There was a crash of splintering wood.
Now it's got into the building. It'll come up the stairs.
Arthur looked over the roof again.
Yes, could try to grab the drain pipe.
Colon looked sideways. There was a pipe a few feet away.
Does it look safe? Compared with what?
Colon tried to swing his legs. Every muscle in his arm screamed at him. He was overweight. He'd always meant to take exercise one day. He just hadn't thought it was going to be today.
I can hear it walking up the stairs.
Colon tried to swing faster.
What are you going to do? Oh, I'll be fine. I'll jump.
Jump?
Sure, I'll be safe, cause I'll be normal-sized. The smaller yez are, the lighter yez fall.
Colon could feel the drainpipe with his boot now, but there was a crash from somewhere on the roof.
Oh, gods! Right! See you at the bottom!
The gnome stepped off the roof.
Okay, so far!
He shouted as he went past Colon.
Doing fine!
Continued the dopplering voice. Sergeant Colon looked up into two red glows.
Oh, gods!
Colon heaved his legs around, stood on air for a moment, grabbed the top of the pipe, ducked his head as a pottery fist swung at him, heard the nasty little noise as the pipe's rusty bolt said goodbye to the wall, and still clinging to the pipe, disappeared backwards into the fog. Mr. Sock looked up at the sound of the door opening, then cowered against the sausage machine.
You? You can't come back? I sold you!
Dorful regarded him steadily for a few seconds, then took the largest cleaver from the blood-stained rack on the wall. Sock began to shake.
I was always good to you!
The golem pushed him aside and stepped out of the slaughterhouse and towards the cattle pens. The workers, humans and trolls alike, followed at a cautious distance. It was a big cleaver in the golem's hand. The steam over the cattle pens mingled with the fog. Hundreds of dark eyes watched Dorful curiously as he walked between the fences. They were always quiet when the golem was around. He stopped by one of the largest pens, brought the cleaver down hard, and sliced the lock off the gate. He walked onto the sheep pens and opened them too. The pigs were next, then the poultry.
All of them?
Said Mr. Sock. Ignoring the watchers, the golem re-entered the slaughterhouse. Shortly afterwards, he came out leading the ancient billy goat on a piece of string. At the wide gate that led onto the main road, he let the goat loose. It trotted away up the road. The animals followed it in a rush. Dorful stood and watched them go. Anger finally overcame Sock's terror.
"What the hell are you doing?" he shouted. "That's money walking out of the gate!"
There was a tally board by the entrance. Dorful picked up the chalk and wrote, "No, Master." The chalk crumbled in his fingers. Dorful walked out into the fog. Sherry looked up from her workbench.
"This wick's full of arsenic acid! Well done, sir!"
"What an evil way to kill anyone," said Angua.
"Certainly clever," said Vimes. "Vetinari sits up half the night writing and is poisoned by the light. Okay, I think we should go and have a look at the candle factory.
You come too, Little Bottom. We'll pick detritus up on the way. It's time to...
Prod buttock, sir? Said Carrot.
Close.
Sergeant Colon's view of the world was certainly changing. Firstly, the drainpipe he was riding hit the wall of the building opposite, and Colon found himself sliding down the diagonal. But Colon was a heavy man, and his weight slid nearer to the middle of the pipe sagged, and snapped. Colon dropped, and landed on something soft, which went... He bounced off it, and landed on something lower and softer, which went... He rolled from this onto something even lower and apparently made of feathers, which went insane, and pecked him. The street was full of animals milling around uncertainly. When animals are uncertain, they get nervous, and the street was already, as it were, paved with anxiety. Hooves trod on his hands, and very large dribbly noses sneezed at him. Colon got up and skidded on some cow's moment of crisis as he tried to make his way to the curb. A goose hissed at him. Colon backed off, turned, and came face to face with a bull like a beef cube on legs. It turned its huge head from side to side so that each rolling eye could get a sight of the sergeant. It was clear neither of them liked him very much. It lowered its head to charge. As the animals crowded around him, Colon took the only way of escape possible. There were men slumped all over the alley.
"Hello, hello, hello. What's all this, then?"
said Carrot. A groaning man looked up at him.
"We were viciously attacked!"
Angua tapped Vimes on the shoulder and pointed to the wall opposite, on which was written, "No Master."
"You were attacked by a golem, were you?"
"Right, vicious bugger!"
Carrot's gaze travelled to the big hammer lying in the gutter. Other tools were strewn around. Several had their handles broken. A long crowbar was bent nearly into a circle.
"Lucky you were all so well armed," he said.
"It turned on us. Everyone knows they're not allowed to fight back."
There was the sound of running feet behind them, and a couple of men in blood-stained aprons caught up with them.
"It went that way,"
one yelled.
"It went round the cattle yards and let everything out, everything."
"What for?"
said Vimes.
"How should I know? And it put old Fosdyke in his sausage machine."
"What?"
"Oh, it didn't turn the handle. It shoved parsley in his mouth, dropped an onion down his trousers, covered him in oatmeal and dropped him in the hopper."
Angua's shoulders started to shake.
"Then he went into the poultry merchants, grabbed Mr. Terwilly and..."
The man stopped, aware there was a lady present.
"Made use of some sage and onion, if you know what I mean."
"You mean he..."
"Yes."
"Oh." Suddenly, there was a bellow further up the street.
"My God," said Vimes, "what the hell is that?"
Something big and muddy was approaching. In the gloom, it looked vaguely like a fat centaur. In fact, it was half Colon, half bull. As the massive bull cantered past, the sergeant rolled his eyes wildly.
"I daren't get off! I daren't get off! How did you get on?" shouted Vimes. "I just grabbed the horn, sir. Next minute I was on its back." "Well, hang on." "Yes, sir. Hanging on, sir."
Vimes turned. "Carrot, Angua, get down to Carrie's tallow works. Keep an eye on it, but don't go in until we get there, understand?"
"Yes, sir."
"Detritus, let's get Fred off that thing."
The crowds were melting away ahead of the bull. A ton of pedigree bull does not experience traffic congestion.
"Can you steer it, Fred?"
Vimes yelled as he ran along behind.
"How, sir?" "Take the bull by the horns, man."
"I could shoot it with my bow, Mr. Vimes," said Detritus.
"Not in this crowded street, Sergeant. What's that chicken doing?"
A small bantam cock was racing up the street. It skidded to a halt just in front of the bull. A smaller figure jumped off its back, leapt up, caught hold of the ring through the bull's nose, swung up further until it was on the bull's forehead. It took firm hold of a lock of hair in each tiny hand.
"It's wee Mad Arthur de Gnome, sir. He's trying to nut the bull."
There was a noise, like a slow woodpecker.
"Take that, you big lump!"
The bull stopped. It staggered backwards. "Fred," Vimes whispered, "slip off its back while it's busy." With a panicky look, Sergeant Colon slid down to the ground. Vimes hustled him into a doorway. Then he hustled him out again. A doorway was far too confined a space in which to be close to Fred Colon. "Fred, why are you all covered in crap?" Colon had hoped he wouldn't be asked that.
"Well, sir, you know that creek that you're up without a paddle? It started there and got worse, sir."
"Why's that gnome nutting that bull?"
"We owe him a dollar, sir."
The bull was on its knees, dazed and bewildered. Wee Mad Arthur looked up and grinned.
"One of these buggers trod on my grandpa once."
"Was he hurt?"
"He got one of his horns twisted right off."
Miscellaneous livestock scattered madly as Carrot, Angua and Sherry made their way down the shambles. They especially tried to keep away from Angua. Some tried to climb walls.
"Why are they so scared?"
said Sherry.
"Can't imagine," said Angua.
They walked around the candle factory. Light from its high windows indicated that candle-making continued all night.
"I don't see what good this is going to do," said Angua. "Even if we find arsenic, so what? There's no crime in owning it, is there?"
"Is there a crime in owning that?"
A golem was walking slowly up the alley. It was unlike any other they'd seen. The others were ancient and as shapeless as a gingerbread man. This one resembled a statue made of white clay. Around its head, as part of the design, was a crown.
"I was right," murmured Carrot. "They did make themselves a golem, the poor devils. They thought a king would make them free. Look at its legs."
As the golem walked, lines of red light appeared and disappeared all over its legs and across its body and arms.
"It's cracking."
"I knew you couldn't bake pottery in an old bread oven,"
said Sherry.
"It's not the right shape."
The golem disappeared into the factory.
"Let's go," said Carrot. "Commander Vimes told us to wait."
"Yes, but we don't know what might be going on. We can't hang around now. Come on."
He darted across the alley and opened the door. There were crates piled inside, with a narrow passageway between them. The air smelt of hot wax. They stepped out into the factory. Candles whirled overhead, hundreds, thousands of them, dangling by their wicks from an endless belt of complex wooden links that switchbacked down the long hall.
"It's called a producing line," said Carrot. "Look at the speed."
Angua pointed. Further up the hall, the switchbacks of the line converged in a complicated knot. There was a figure in the middle, arms moving in a blur.
"Sherry, do you know how to use any kind of weapon?"
No, Captain."
"Right. Wait in the alley, then."
Sherry scuttled off, looking relieved. Angua sniffed the air.
"There's been a vampire here.
I think we'd..."
"I warn you, I've got a bow," said a voice behind them. "A crossbow."
They turned.
"Ah, Mr. Carey."
"I knew you'd come."
The crossbow's point moved uncertainly.
"It killed those old men, didn't it?"
"Yes."
"Why? I didn't tell it to."
"Because they helped make it, I think. It knew who to blame."
"Well, the golem sold it to me. I thought it'd build up the business, but now the damn thing won't stop."
Carrie glanced up at the line of candles whirring overhead.
"I've laid off everyone except the packing department, and they're on three shifts and overtime."
"Then get it to stop."
"It goes off into the streets when we run out of tallow. You want it walking around looking for something else to do?"
"All you have to do is change its words."
"It won't let me."
"It can't not let you."
"It won't let me."
"What about the poisoned candles?"
"It wasn't my idea."
"Whose was it then?"
Carrie's crossbow swung back and forth. He licked his lips.
"Whose idea, Mr. Carey?"
"I'm not going to end up in some alley with as much blood as a banana."
"Who's the vampire?" Angua said. "The place reeks of vampire."
He said we could get the golem to do anything.
Like making poisoned candles?
Yes, to keep Vetinari out of the way.
The candles killed two other people.
Who?
An old lady and a baby. Now, put down the crossbow. We can talk.
There was a sudden cessation of noise. The clacking line had stopped. Silence unrolled. The last candle dropped off the line and tumbled into a hopper. And in the silence, the sound of footsteps.
Too late!
Carrie moaned. Carrot saw his finger move. His hand flung itself up and across. Angua heard the sickening tearing noise as his palm whirled in front of her face. Carrot landed heavily on the floor, clutching his left hand. The crossbow bolt was sticking out of the palm. Angua crouched down. Carrot grabbed her wrist.
The point's silver. Don't touch it.
They looked up as a shadow crossed the light. The King Golem looked down at them. It glistened with tallow and wax. Angua felt her teeth and her fingernails begin to lengthen. Then she saw the small face of Sherry peering nervously around a pile of crates. She fought down her werewolf instincts and screamed,
"Stay right there!"
She saw Sherry look up at a fire axe on the wall. The dwarf took it down and weighed it in her hands.
"No, don't try!"
Sherry came at a run, yelling more terrible battle cries, and hacked at the golem's waist, chipping off a piece of clay. The golem watched the dwarf like an elephant watching an attack by a rogue chicken. Then it picked the axe out of the air, Sherry trailing behind it like a comet, and hurled it aside. Angua hauled Carrot to his feet. Blood dripped from his hand. She tried to shut her nostrils. Full moon tomorrow. No more choices. Carrot drew his sword.
"I am arresting you!"
The golem's arm whirred across. The sword buried itself in a crate of candles.
"Got any more clever ideas?"
said Angua as they backed away. Their heels met a wall of crates. Then, as the golem raised its fists, a blow rocked the big double doors in the end wall. The King Golem's head turned. The doors burst inwards. For a moment, Dorful was framed in the doorway. Then the red golem lowered its head and charged. The floorboard shook and drummed under him. The golems collided in the middle of the floor. Jagged lines of fire spread across the king's body as cracks opened, but it roared and caught Dorful around the middle. They stood locked for a moment, creaking. Then Dorful's hand came up holding something. He smashed the other golem over the head with its own leg. As it spun, Dorful's other hand lashed out, but was grabbed. The king swiveled with a strange grace, bore Dorful to the floor, rolled, and kicked out. Dorful looked back to see both his feet pinwheeling into the wall. The king swung one hand with palm edgewise and calmly sheared the top off Dorful's head. It removed the chem and crumpled it up. The glow died in Dorful's eyes. Then the king picked up its own leg, balanced for a moment, and joined itself together. Its red gaze swept the factory and flared when it caught sight of Carrot.
"There must be a back way out of here," said Angua. "Carrie got out."
The king started to run after them, but hit an immediate problem. It had put its leg on back to front. It began to limp in a circle, but somehow the circle got nearer to them.
"It just killed Dorful, just like that,"
said Carrot.
"Carrot, they're machinery. Look, we can make it to the door."
Carrot shook himself free.
"That's murder, and we're watchmen. It killed him."
"It's an it, and so's he.
Commander Vimes said someone had to speak for the people with no voices."
"He really believes it," Angua thought. "Vimes put words in his head."
"Keep it occupied!"
Carrot shouted, and darted away.
"How? Organise a sing-song?"
"I've got a plan."
"Oh, good."
Vimes looked up at the candle factory. He could dimly see two cressets burning on either side of a shield. "Look at that, will you?"
"What's that, sir?"
"His damn coat of arms.
Why's it got a lighted fish on it?"
"In heraldry, that's a poisson, and it's supposed to be a lamp."
A lamp made out of a poisson. Well, there's a thing.
At least it's got the motto in proper language, said Sergeant Colon, instead of all the old-fashioned stuff. Art brought forth the candle. That, Sergeant Detritus, is a pun, or play on words. Of course, his name is Arthur, see? Vimes felt a hole open up in his head.
Damn, he said. Damn, damn, damn. He showed it to me.
A figure darted out of the building and scurried along the street.
That's Carrie, said Vimes, starting to run.
He was only yards away from the fleeing figure when Carrie ducked into a dark alleyway. Vimes skidded to a halt. He'd seen the shape of a crossbow.
I know it's you, Carrie, he shouted. You made poisoned candles.
I want to turn King's evidence. They told me it would be all right.
Which they?
Look, if I tell you everything, you'll let me go, right?
The two sergeants had caught up. Vimes pulled Detritus towards him. C doesn't come out of the alley the other way. The troll nodded.
Have we got a bargain?
What, Mr. Carrie?
A bargain!
No, we damn well haven't. I'm not a tradesman, but I'll tell you something. They betrayed you.
There was silence from the darkness, and then a sound like a sigh.
You can't stay in there all night, Mr. Carrie, said Vimes.
There was another sound, a leathery sound. Vimes glanced up into the coils of fog.
Something's not right.
Come on! He ran into the alley. A shape loomed. Detritus?
Yes, sir.
Where did he go? Then he saw a huddled outline at the foot of a wall.
Mr. Carrie?
He knelt down and lit a match.
Ooh, nasty, said Colon. Something's broken his neck.
Vimes looked up. There were no doors, no ladders, no handy low roofs. Angua faced the king. It moved uncertainly, with little jerks and twitches. Dorfel's attack had left it damaged. Red light shone from dozens of new cracks.
You're cracking up, she shouted. The oven wasn't right. You're half-baked.
She somersaulted back as a blow hummed past her face.
"Can you get it to move a little closer, please?" said a voice from the darkness on high.
Carrot was crawling along the rickety structure that supported the production line.
"Carrot!"
The king grabbed at her leg. She lashed out with her foot and caught it on the knee. She made it crack, but the fire below was still there. The pieces of pottery seemed to float on it.
"Right!"
Carrot dropped off the gantry. He landed on the king's back and began to pound its head with the hilt of his sword. It staggered.
Got to get the words out. It's the only way.
The king hit a stack of boxes which burst and rained candles over the floor. Then there was a commotion in the doorway. Vimes ran in, sword drawn.
Oh, gods!
Sergeant Detritus?
Sir?
Crossbow bolt through the head, please.
If you say so, sir.
It's head, Sergeant. Mine's fine. Carrot, get off!
Carrot steadied himself and leapt. He landed awkwardly on a heap of candles. His leg buckled, and he tumbled over the inert shell that had been Dorful.
"Hey, mister, look this way."
The king turned. Vimes didn't catch everything that happened next, because it all happened so quickly. He was aware of the rush of air as the bolt rebounded. Then the golem was crouching down by Carrot. It raised a fist and brought it down. Dorful's arm suddenly moved, gripping the king's wrist. As the king jerked back, Dorful held on and levered himself up on what remained of his legs. As he came up, so did his fist. Time slowed. Dorful's fist swung like a planet, without apparent speed, but with a drifting unstoppability. And then, just before the fist landed, the king's expression changed. It smiled. The golem's head exploded in slow motion, one long second of floating pottery and words. Scraps of paper flew out, dozens, scores of them, tumbling gently to the floor. Slowly, peacefully, the king hit the floor. The red light died, the cracks opened, and then there were just pieces. Dawful collapsed on top of them.
"He came alive," said Carrot, struggling up. "But that thing had smashed the world."